Well, good evening, everybody. This is Chandradas again here with Lokabandhu for day three of Audio Boo from the European Chairs Assembly in Vadrasana Retreat Centre in Suffolk. We're here again on the lawn with the wood pigeons, and a much colder day today. The wind has picked up a little bit, the temperature's dropped, but we didn't really mind today because we were having a very, very absorbing time with today's guest, Visantra. And Visantra was spending a whole day with us looking at the issue of spiritual receptivity. And we've literally just come out of this session, so it feels premature in all sorts of ways to be trying to sum up the day, but we're going to have a go and at least say something about the flavour of what we explored and that kind of practice. And I've also, of course, got Lokabandhu with me, as usual. Do you want to say hello, Lokabandhu?
Hello, Chandradasa. Hello, world. This is Lokabandhu. Saying hello.
And the pigeon has come to join us. That's a homing pigeon who's got lost, I was told. And he's been here for a week and he doesn't eat. He just stays here on his own. It's quite a strong image. He's been here. Yeah. He won't be fed, but he also won't go away. So maybe there's something about as he likes. Hopefully he'll find a home. Speaking of finding a home, today felt, certainly to me, a bit like coming home to a certain kind of practice. I certainly remember very early on reading some of Sangharakshita's pamphlets that he published in the early days on Anatta, and been really inspired, at least by the ideas, certainly with very little experience of what he was talking about, but just touching back to that today and listening to you. So what's your sense at the end of a whole day of, I think you called it a whiz around receptivity at the end?
Yeah, well, I was focusing during the day on just sitting as the as the practice, which really can help you get it more deeply into spiritual receptivity. And I think perhaps why the chairs asked me to come and do something is because over the years in our history in Sri Lanka, that practice maybe dropped out a little bit. It's like I've been around ever since 1874 in Sri Lanka.
1874.
The great Victorian era of our order.
Those were the days. So in the early days, when we had a retreat, say, you know, you would have, the programme would often be before brunch, it wouldn't be breakfast, but brunch, you'd have mindfulness breathing, walking and chanting, metta bhavana, walking and chanting, just sitting. And as the days went on, it might be mindfulness of breathing, just sitting, or metta bhavana, just sitting. So there was much more emphasis on it. And it seems to have sort of dropped away a little bit, in, at least in some parts of the Sri Ratna forest. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity just to explore it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's an important part of practice. Partly because it's not making an effort in the same kind of way that you do with mindfulness and metta. So, so it makes a kind of counterpoint, you know. If you just do mindfulness and metta intensively, actually it's quite tiring for the mind.
But then it was, a few years ago, it was rediscovered, I would say. And people found it really inspiring, but started giving it different names. And then it wasn't at all clear for a period how it fitted with the rest of our system of practice and with Bhante's teaching of just sitting. So it was called pure awareness, it was called formless meditation, it was called shikantaza. It raised the question, what is just sitting anyway? Is, do you just sit, or is there more to it than that? And it's taken us quite a long time to put all that new energy into our system of practice, and then bring it into daily life. And maybe that was of particular interest to the chairs, who are all busy people by definition, quite motivated, even quite driven. I don't want to say that in a pejorative way, but you know, want to practice as well. So how do they just sit in the middle of a busy life?
I had a question about it, actually, that it didn't seem appropriate to ask today, but I suppose given that history where it seemed to drop out of currency for a lot of people in the movement, some people probably grew up without really doing it very much. I caught the tail end of it, I think, when I came into the movement. there's, I suppose I've heard some people express concern about it being a vogue. You know, it's like there's a, it's quite popular in the wider Buddhist world, mm-hmm. not to do a kind of intentional, structured bhavana mm-hmm. practice of some kind. You know, what's your sense of this kind of second wave of just sitting coming through? Is it maturing as a as a practice within our community, or is there still quite a way to go until we've figured out how it sits in relation to developmental practices?
I think there's still some way to go before we can really draw out all the implications of it. But it does feel as if now it is at least finding its place in our mandala practice. And I think that rather than it being something which people discovered not from Sangharakshita so directly but from other sources and bringing it in, but bringing it in with a whole lot of assumptions and contexts which didn't really kind of fit so easily. I think we're now in a phase of real assimilation.
Right.
And I feel very optimistic and excited about how that could all happen. But I think there's lots more we can explore with this whole way of practice that we haven't really done. And Sangharakshita, in a way, he would give very little instruction about just sitting. And I think on his part that was kind of deliberate. He almost didn't want to give people any kind of direction. He just wanted them to sit with as little kind of reference points as possible and just kind of discover for themselves. But I think over time, what we need now is to give a lot more kind of guidance about ways in which you can get into just sitting and how it can unfold. And I think that's kind of the job. I think we've brought into our mandala, and now it's time to do those jobs.
So, again, following on from that, you just finished a long retreat, a 3-year retreat, and it sounds like you did quite a bit of that basic thing that you described today, where you sit with a question about what is the nature of my experience, lightly, but you're constantly interested in, what am I bringing to the party every moment.
Yeah.
Does that, when you were in that experience and you're in that experience of practice now, does it touch back to that early experience of joining a spiritual movement where it was more part of the experience of being taught about Buddhist practice and Buddhist meditation? I mean, can you feel the connection back to your early days with Sangharakshita and some of his early disciples? Or does it actually feel like a different order of adventure, as it were, in meditation?
I think all these things kind of build. They just build over time. And the Sangharakshita's teaching in the early days, that was my kind of foundation for my whole practice, and I think everything else that I've done since then, I've kind of taken into that. I've brought it back into relation to those things, that's been the kind of touchstone, I suppose. So it's been really important to do that for me. Otherwise, you can end up practicing kind of in parallel. You can see it with some people who, have practiced within Sri Ratna and also outside, and it's a bit as if you can take different Buddhist traditions, and they all develop a certain kind of self-consistency which can work, but then when you try to move between them, it can take quite a while to bring them together, and if you don't make that effort, then you end up, with kind of parallel sets of practices, views of the Dharma, ideas of how to practice, and that's an uneasy place to be.
So you've hived off one bit and it's over here, and you've hived off another bit and it's over there.
One thing I found inspiring, partly today, but partly in the whole recent, the way we've talked about practice, is that it's not just meditation. We're seeking to cultivate certain qualities, mindfulness, loving-kindness, receptivity, and so on, in sitting meditation, but in life, and in action, and in all aspects of life. And also, we're asking people at all levels to cultivate those qualities. So I like that, partly because it's taking practice off the cushion, into life, which is where you need these things, And partly we're kind of making more demands on people, practice these things almost like all levels of the path at right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So receptivity is not just something to do, you know, some way along, it's something to do right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
We were talking today about spiritual death and spiritual rebirth. Mm. It's not something to do just pre-enlightenment, it's something to do now, right now, in some way, at some level. Yeah.
I thought it was one of the best things about today was, you know, we had a full day to explore some very complex material that probably requires at least 3 years to go into, and we don't all have we can't do 3 years here, although it feels like we ought to just after that session. But I liked how, I mean, we had some great times in terms of, I loved personally just exploring the ideas and hearing people ask questions and laughter go around the room as we pulled the rug out from under our own feet, etc. But the fact that every so often I think we stopped five times and did a practical exercise where it was like, okay, you sit there, and sometimes it was inspiring just to see that you can actually do this work, and sometimes, as I was saying a second ago, it's spiritually humiliating because you realise how completely basic your delusion is and how persistent it is. It just will not, you know, it will not shift easily. We will not be moved. I will not be moved.
No surrender.
Yeah, no surrender. That's right. The Ian Paisley inside. Oh, dear. Where did we go with that? Anyway, I found it. I certainly appreciated it.
It's real spiritual progress, just kind of seeing how through and through, you know, how pervasive, you know, those tendencies to refer back to me all the time just are.
Actually, I wouldn't mind if you'd repeat. There was one bit in the day that I noticed there was a real silence in the room when you told the story, or you gave the image of, I think it was one of the Tibetan teachers that you'd come across, about the director and the actors. Could you just so people can get a little flavour of what this was like, this thing?
Yeah, this comes from an English teacher in the Tibetan tradition called Rigsin Shikpa. So his image is of the mind as being like an empty stage, so lots of space. And then onto the stage come different actors, and so they're like different thoughts that pass across the mind. And that's fine, you know, you watch an actor enter stage left and they say their piece and they go off stage right. And there's no difficulty with that. In fact, it's really nice to have the stage filled with interesting things going on. But then there's also, by the stage, there's an empty director's chair. And at a certain point, one of those actors sits down in the director's chair and starts being the one in control. So as we're watching our minds, we notice, I certainly notice, that there's the me, that there are sort of thoughts passing through the mind, but then every now and again there are thoughts which, well, more than now and again, a lot of the time, there are thoughts which feel like they have a special authority. They're prioritized, and that they feel like they're me. You know, I am the one who is having all these other thoughts. But actually, when you explore the me that feels like they're in control and who's directing our lives, when you look into that, you see that actually what you find in, you know, the me is made up of the same stuff, as you like, as the other thoughts. The me is another, that's sat in the director's chair, is another actor.
And there are lots of exciting, interesting things one could talk about around that, but actually the point seems to be there's some work to be done where you sit down and you do something, or you don't do something. You just sit and you sit with your experience.
And you take a real deep interest in your experience and the nature of your experience, and you can question the assumptions that you're bringing to your experience.
That's right. And I found myself at the end of it talking about spiritual humiliation. It's like the response to that was actually just to find it quite funny. In a way, it's quite funny. You just think, gosh, after all this time, he's still there. It's like, it is amusing.
One of the richest phrases I found today, in a way, goes right back to the very early teaching of Sangrechta, which is the mandala of the greater mandala of uselessness, or the greater mandala of aesthetic appreciation, where you can be busy, you can do stuff, you can go around, whatever, save the world, but you've got to do all that in a bigger context, a bigger picture, of sort of uselessness, which sounds paradoxical and even perverse or even impossible. But it's a very rich phrase.
Yeah, it is.
And I felt like we were rediscovering it today.
Yeah.
Particularly relevant to busy chairs. Mm. You want to be busy, have to be busy, but have to do it in a certain way. A greater mandala of uselessness or aesthetic appreciation.
And it felt like rediscovering that in that little exercise you did where it was like, can you give 20% of your attention all the time to the breath in your belly as you're sitting, being busy, being... you know, constructive and productive and all those things. And I loved that. I loved that. I found it extremely useful, actually. Okay. Certainly, it was a relief to hear that you can take that fantastic concept and actually apply it in that direct way. So thanks very much for today. It was a wonderful day. Sorry we can't just talk for hours and inflict it on the internet. But there you go. Maybe another time we should do a whole series. Visantra Boos, we could call them. So... yes, thanks again to Visantra. Go well when you leave here.
Much.
Hope it will be soon before we're all met again.
May it be so. May our paths cross.
May our paths cross. The pigeon, the homing pigeon, has wandered off across the grass. Lokabandhu has been photographing him very merrily. Maybe we'll put up a picture of the pigeon afterwards. So thanks to Lokabandhu too. And he and I will see you again tomorrow as we move into the business end of the European Chairs meeting, where we have the... I suppose the privilege of trying to work out how to organise a spiritual movement. Which is pretty funny when you really think about it. So Lokabandhu's customary sign-off is coming up right now.
It's goodbye from Lokabandhu. I can never remember what I say, but apparently I say the same thing every time.
He always says, this is Lokabandhu, over and out.
Oh, sorry. This is Lokabandhu, over and out.